So this is a very significant chapter in the Srimad Bhagavatam concerning the pastimes of Krishna. because in this chapter, Krishna meets the Rajavasis, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, after many, many years. He left when he was very, very young, I think 11 years and some odd months. And it was almost 100 years later that he actually met them again. Yet Krishna promised when he left to the gopis, "I will return very soon." And the gopis, he said, were the highest devotees. And he said, "I will return very soon." Then when he went to Mathura with Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd boys, then Krishna killed Kamsa and the wrestlers and met his parents, Vasudeva and Devaki, and they said, "Here's our son, you have to stay with us." So Krishna went to Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd boys and said, "Now you better go back to Vrindavan, and I will come back in a few days." So they said, "Okay, Krishna's made a promise, so we'll go back." And but Krishna, as we see, didn't go back. And then some months later, he sent Uddhava with a message for Nanda Maharaj and Yasoda and the inhabitants, and he wrote a letter which Uddhava read to the gopis, but still he didn't come back, apparently. Then after that, Krishna was fighting with demons and Jarasandha, etc. And finally he left Mathura completely and he went and established a city in Dwarka and moved all the inhabitants to Dwarka. So he was quite far away from Vrindavan. Of course, Mathura is very close to Vrindavan even then. He didn't return after several days or several months. And then he went to Dwarka. And then many, many, many years passed and still he didn't come back. So finally, the inhabitants of Vrindavan thought, "We have to meet Krishna." And therefore, this chapter is a description of the inhabitants of Vrindavan meeting Krishna for so many years. The question arises, if Krishna does not keep his promise to the greatest devotees, then what to speak of anyone else? So Krishna promises, "Name bhakta pranasyati," my devotees never vanquish, never fall down, I protect my devotees. What does that mean? What does the promise mean? If Krishna, and yeah, you go to the spiritual world, you don't come back. What are all the promises? If Krishna promises the greatest devotees, and then he breaks the promise. And even after 100 years, he doesn't come back. Yeah, so there's a big doubt. And if people read the Bhagavatam and they see how Krishna leaves Vrindavan and we see the condition of the inhabitants of Vrindavan when Uddhava goes back, then we can understand that they are suffering. And it's described there as well as in the Nectar of Devotion, it describes how in separation they have death-like symptoms. They're almost dying because Krishna's not coming back. So we would wonder, how could Krishna do this? And how could he inflict such pain on the inhabitants of Vrindavan who Uddhava said are the highest devotees, greater than the people in Mathura and his mother and father Vasudeva Devaki? There's all of Nanda and the people of Vrindavan are higher, they're much greater, and their love is more intense. So we know that according to the intensity of the love that the devotee shows, Krishna should respond equally. So we have the greatest devotees and greatest separation. So Krishna should respond to that. And he should satisfy them. And yet we see in this case, Krishna doesn't do that. So it appears very, of course, Krishna breaks his promise. Krishna is very hard-hearted. Krishna doesn't care for the greatest devotees. We get all sorts of doubts like that because of this event. However, we should find an explanation for that. If Krishna does break his promise to the highest devotees, then what is the use of Krishna's promises at all? So, actually, Krishna must respond to his devotees and also keep his promise to the highest devotees. That must be so. Yeah. So that must be the truth, but we don't see that from this pastime. And Bhagavatam is supposed to be the highest literature, and the pastimes of Krishna is supposed to be the highest, and yet we see Krishna breaks all the rules. What he's supposed to be doing. Right. Huh? So, the answer is that actually, sometimes Krishna acts mysteriously. And no one can really understand how Krishna acts. Even the greatest devotees cannot understand that. And that's described even in the first canto where Bhishma says that we cannot understand the activities of the Lord. And Kunti Devi says the same thing. We cannot understand how the Lord acts. We think we know what the Lord does and those qualities. But sometimes he acts in a surprising way and we don't understand. We cannot completely understand what he's doing or thinking. So this is the nature of the Lord. However, everything the Lord does is perfect. And there's a good reason for everything. That's one thing. Yes, the Lord acts in a certain way. The other is, of course, that sometimes the Lord himself wants to hide things. We know that bhakti is rahasya. It is guha, very, very secret. And that's said in the Bhagavad Gita. So it's the highest secret. And Krishna does not give bhakti to everyone. Okay? And in fact, it's disguised. So similarly, the pastimes of Krishna are also disguised so that people cannot approach them. And Krishna himself is disguised so that people don't understand him. Okay? So Krishna appears like a small boy. He is a small boy. And he bewilders even Lord Brahma. And Brahma thinks, how can this be God? Because here is Krishna, who's supposed to be the avatar, who kills all the demons and saves us and restores Dharma. But here he is in the fields with the cowherd boys, and he's got rice in left hand, rice in his left hand and his right hand, and rice in his mouth, and rice all over his body, and he's eating, and he's throwing food around to his friends, and his friends are throwing food at him. How can this be God? He's just a little cowherd boy, like any other cowherd boy. Krishna especially hides his truth about his nature, that he is God, and people cannot understand him. And similarly, his pastimes are such that people cannot understand him. So one thing, he hides from the materialists and from those who are spiritual but who are not qualified for Krishna's pastimes. He will hide from them so they cannot understand these pastimes at all. And another thing is that things are expressed in a way which hide things as well. So in the eighth canto there, the Lord says that I prefer to express things indirectly and not say things in a direct manner. This is what the rishis prefer, and that's what I prefer also. The sages speak indirectly, and they don't tell the truth explicitly, or they say it in a very puzzling way. So therefore, in the Upanishads, we'll have many statements which look puzzling. The Lord walks, but he doesn't walk. He is near, but he is far. He has feet, but he doesn't have feet. He has hands, but he doesn't have hands. He doesn't have eyes, but he sees, etc. So all contrary statements, very mysterious. So this is how the Lord prefers things. And one cannot take literal meaning. One has to figure out what actually does he mean behind this. So the Lord does not speak directly in all cases. And similarly, the Bhagavatam does not speak directly in all cases, in spite of the fact that it's the highest literature that's supposed to be for the people of Kali Yuga and to enlighten them and show the highest truth, Krishna. Still, certain aspects are hidden. Yeah? So Sukadeva Goswami also hides things and doesn't reveal things directly. So Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur was explaining that the truth is there, but it is hidden. And it's his return. And he did keep his promise to the gopis and to Nanda Yasoda. He went back. But it is hidden. So some people who read the Bhagavata will say, oh, Krishna actually, it's true. He's just a normal person who breaks his promises. So in this way, the truth about Krishna is hidden from some people. However, the devotees know it is impossible that Krishna could break his promise to the highest devotees. There must be something behind it. And they look, and then they will find the truth. So, in this way, the Bhagavatam sometimes hides the truth from the non-devotees. Vishnu Chakravarti also explains that the Bhagavatam is like Mohini Avatar. So Mohini Avatar was the form of a beautiful woman. The Lord is the form of a beautiful woman. Okay? Of course, Mohini means she who bewilders. Okay? So who did she bewilder? She bewildered the demons. The demons had the nectar churned from the milk ocean, the pot of nectar, and they were thinking, we'll drink the nectar and then we'll be immortal and we'll fight with the devatas and kill all the devatas. So that was their plan. And then the devatas couldn't get the nectar and they were defeated. So the Lord intervened and he came in the form of Mohini. And then the devatas saw Mohini, and then the demons saw Mohini. And when the demons saw Mohini, they said, oh, this is a very beautiful woman. She's coming towards us. She must like us. And then she began to speak. And then the demons said, oh, very, very wonderful. And they said, well, we're very pleased with you. We'll do anything you say. So then Mohini said, oh, you're very wonderful. Give me the nectar. And then the demons said, oh, so we'll give her the nectar. We understand that she'll just give it back to us anyway. So they gave her the nectar. And then what did she do? She took the nectar and gave it to the devatas. She cheated the demons. So the demons were completely bewildered. So, the Bhagavatam is like Mohini. And it bewilders people. So, the materialists are those who don't really believe in Krishna when they read the Bhagavatam and get another meaning from it. They are cheated from the truth. And those who are devotees will actually find the truth about Krishna and the pastimes, etc. So that's why it doesn't speak directly. It hides things from the non-devotees. And the devotees understand, oh, that cannot be the truth. Why is it like that? It cannot be like that. It must be some other meaning. And then they search and they find the real meaning. So this way, the Bhagavatam sometimes hides the truth from the demons. So that is particularly true in this incident of Krishna going away from Vrindavan and not returning. And even after he went to Kurukshetra and then inhabitants of Vrindavan came there, then they told Krishna, you come back with us. And what did Krishna say? No, I cannot come back because I still have some demons to kill. I'll come back later. And then the inhabitants of Vrindavan went back to Vrindavan, and Krishna went on to kill a few more demons. So even then he did. They said, you come back with us. He didn't go back. So it is puzzling. And in the Bible, we don't see him going back at all. So it is almost inconclusive. Why Krishna is like this? And in spite of being so affectionate towards the Brajavasis, why he acts like this? So there must be an answer to it. So the answer is that actually Krishna did go back. But as I said, there's two versions. One external version, and then there's another version as well. So the external version, he didn't go back. But that's contrary to our Siddhanta, how he could not go back. So therefore, he also did go back. So it's described that Krishna goes back in several ways. For 3 months, Krishna didn't go back from Mathura, and Vrajavasis were waiting. But he did go back in one sense because of intense love of the Vrajavasis in separation from Krishna. Because of that intense separation, Krishna would momentarily appear before them in their minds. So that's called spurti. So Krishna would suddenly appear before them. So in that way they got a little bit of satisfaction. Then Krishna sent Uddhava. Uddhava was more or less a good substitute because he looked very much like Krishna. But he wasn't Krishna. So he only delivered a message. But first of all, when Uddhava went there, there's a very strange description of when he went there, because it is a very joyful description of Vrindavan, with the cows mooing and the cowherd men very joyful, putting the cows in the cow pens and milking the cows, and the calves were there. Everyone was very, very joyous. And then in the next scene, we find another completely different version of Vrindavan, where Nanda and Yasoda are sitting in their house, and there's spider webs all over the kitchen and the stove, and they're sitting there, and they never cook any food, and they never eat. And in order to welcome Uddhava, they have to call in a brahmana to do the cooking, because they have no energy for even cooking and welcoming Uddhava. So their house is desolate and silent. Similarly, all over Braja. And then we see here in the Nectar of Devotion, there's a description there that all the people are lying on the bank of the Jamuna River as if they're dead. They're all lying down out of a separation from Krishna. So we see a very contrary description. So we have two descriptions. One where he sees Vrindavan and everyone very happy and they're herding the cows, etc. And one in which everyone is almost dead. So that is very strange. So Vishnu Chakravarti says, this is proof that actually there's two Vrindavans. And there's two sets of Vrindavasis. The external one, who are in separation, almost dying. And then the other set, where Krishna actually returns and comes back. But we don't see that one. It's uppercut. But to fulfill the desire of the Vrindavasis, to fulfill his promise to the gopis and to Nanda Maharaj, he did go back. And therefore, they were very, very joyful. So that's what you see, the joyful scene when Uddhava comes back. And then the other one we see, everyone is very desolate. So there's two sets of Vrindavasis, and Krishna returns, and everyone's joyful. But we don't see that. And then Krishna's separate. Krishna's in Mathura, and then later in Dwarka, and the Vrindavasis, they're almost dying, lying on the bank of the Jamuna. So by the extraordinary power of Krishna, Chintya Shakti, he produces two sets of Vrindavasis who are not conscious of each other. And he himself has two forms, one form in Vrindavan and one form in Mathura. So in that way, he creates separation for some short period of time, but he also fulfills his promise to the Vrindavasis and comes back. And therefore they're very, very happy with that. So there's a purpose in doing that, of course, and the purpose is that in separation, the love increases and becomes more intense. And Krishna wanted to show the people of Mathura that actually the Vrindavasis have greater love than we have, even though we claim to be the relatives of Krishna and mother and father of Krishna still. They are higher devotees. Why? Because their love and separation shows some extreme symptoms, which we never showed. So after a few days, the Vrindavasis were almost dead from separation. Whereas the inhabitants of Mathura were separated from Krishna for 12 years. Vasudeva and Devaki were separated from Krishna the day he was born, and they never saw him until almost 12 years later. But they didn't have separation from Krishna, like Vrindavasis, after a few days. So Uddhava actually observed this when he went there. That was the purpose of Krishna. He sent Uddhava to observe everything, and Uddhava came back to Mathura. And when he came back, then he announced the Vrindavasis are much greater devotees than we are, because the love that they have is much more intense than our love, even though we claim to be the blood relatives of Krishna. So to testify that the Vrindavasis are the highest devotees in the universe, he separated himself, and then he allowed Uddhava to see that intense separation. So, in other words, Krishna does have a purpose in doing everything. Similarly, when Krishna was with the gopis, first he told them, oh, why are you coming here in the middle of the night? This is not good. I'm a brahmachari. You are women of Vrindavan, some of you are married, and whatever. This isn't good at all. Go back home. So then the gopis thought that Krishna's calling us here like this, and then he's acting like this. This is not proper. And they got angry at Krishna, and they refused to move. And then finally Krishna agreed, okay. And then Krishna was affectionate towards him. And then Krishna disappeared. And then the gopis were very disturbed, and they went searching for Krishna in the forest. And they couldn't find him, and they went deeper and deeper in the forest, and still they couldn't find him. And they became very, very disturbed. And then finally, they found Krishna. And then when they found Krishna, again they got angry at Krishna. They said, why Krishna's like this? Why is he frustrated, disappearing like this, and treating us in a bad way? And they were slightly angry with Krishna. So then Krishna actually explained in a very indirect way through a riddle, actually. He explained that actually, I do this not because I love you so much. And the reason is that by separating myself from you, you display very intense symptoms of love, which no one else displays, that is, symptoms of Mahabhava. And I want to show the world that you are the highest devotees, and therefore I do this. And of course, it causes discomfort for you, therefore you have to forgive me for this. But you are such great devotees that you will forgive me, that is your quality. So he praises them at the same time. He shows that the reason he does this is actually to praise them, and to show that they are the greatest devotees. So then the gopis cannot say anything, they're satisfied. And then, because of that, there's Rasa-lila after that. Krishna has a purpose in doing anything, but even the gopis, the highest devotees, cannot understand why Krishna does certain things. And the inhabitants of Vrindavan cannot understand also. So what to speak of the people of this material world when they read past lives of Krishna? They also cannot understand so many things. But Krishna never breaks his vows to his devotees. And that strong love is never broken. So if there appears to be some contradiction, that is superficial. There's another deeper meaning behind it. So therefore, Krishna never broke his promise and returned. But we see that externally, in this other form, Krishna went to Mathura, then he went to Dwarka. And for many, many years, the Vrajavasis were lying there and almost dying for many, many years. And finally, they were when they saw that Krishna was going to Kurukshetra, they thought, this is a good opportunity. It's not in Dwarka. We don't want to go to Dwarka because there Krishna is the king and all the queens are there. It's not very big. We don't want to see that. So he's going to Kurukshetra. So we'll go to Kurukshetra when he's out of Dwarka with all the palaces and everything like that. We'll meet him there. So this was their opportunity. This was the second group of Vrajavasis, not the invisible ones, but the visible ones. But even then, after the eclipse was over, then Krishna sent most of the people back to Dwarka to protect it. And he remained there with the Vrajavasis. And he couldn't leave them, and they could not leave him. And they remained there for 3 months. And every day they thought, we will go tomorrow. And when tomorrow came, we'll go tomorrow. And the next day came, we'll go tomorrow. For 3 months they would delay and delay and delay and delay like this. But then finally, Balaram said, well, Krishna, I think you have to go back to Dwarka because the demons are there and they're attacking, whatever. So, we better go back. So then Krishna met the Vrajavasis, and then he finally said, well, I have a few more demons to kill. After the demons are killed, I will return. So, Krishna made another promise. And then the Nanda just saw that everyone else said, okay, we'll go back, because Krishna's promising. So did Krishna go back at all? In the Bhagavatam, we do not see that directly. In the Padma Purana, it is mentioned, yes, Krishna did go back. He killed Dantavakra at the southern gate of Mathura, which was no longer operating because they all moved to Dwarka. But anyway, at that place he killed Dantavakra. And after killing Dantavakra, he bathed in the Jamuna River. And then he went into Vrindavan and stayed there for several months. And then he took those inhabitants to Vrindavan, the spiritual world. And then he came back in another form, and he went back to Dwarka again, continued to pass on to Dwarka. So in that way, the Prakatlila was finished. Meanwhile, the upper Kapalila was still there for a while. So in this way, Krishna fulfilled his promise. externally, and he went back and met the Vrajavasis again and performed pastimes there. So in other words, he didn't break his promise even when he was in Kurukshetra. He said, I will come back after killing the demons. So he did that. So he killed Nandavakra. After he killed Nandavakra, he didn't kill any more demons also. So Krishna does not break his promise, but through the pastimes may be covered up for certain purposes. And Krishna may also act in a mysterious way that we don't understand. But if we examine deeply, then we can understand the truth. So therefore, Bhagavatam is like this. We shouldn't think that everything is on the surface. There are deeper aspects as well, and we have to search for them. So that is what the acharyas do. They search out the truth behind all of this. Okay.
Jagannath Paradeshpatra, at that time we celebrate, you know, Jagannath Paradeshpatra going from Kurukshetra to Vrindavan, that is called the Gopika Pulinga Raj. That's why we celebrating at that time.
When Lord Chaitanya was in Puri and the Rath Yatra was in progress, then he would sing a song. And that song actually was a poem by one, not even a spiritual person, it was a literary person, which is still there. And it's a love song, actually, a love poem, in which a woman is on the bank of the river and she's thinking, well, I recollect many years ago this place, and the moon is exactly the same, and it's a springtime, and the trees were there, and the river is there. But it's not the same at the same time. Because she's remembering her previous love. But the person is not there, and she's kind of saying it's not the same thing anymore. The devotees were wondering, why is Lord Chaitanya reciting this mundane love poem about recollections of previous love? They couldn't understand it. But then Sanatana Goswami, he actually understood the truth about it. And the truth is that this is actually the sentiment of the gopis when they came to Kurukshetra, and then they saw Krishna. And it's the same Krishna, but it's not the same Krishna, because it's all different. They cannot enjoy in the same way they enjoyed in Vrindavan, because Krishna is surrounded by his queens and other persons and elders and all the Vrishni dynasty, etc. So they actually want to take Krishna back to Vrindavan, and they even said that. So the idea is that it's the same Krishna, but it's not the same Krishna, because it's all different. The time has passed and things are in a completely different situation. So we long for that previous time where Krishna was in Vrindavan. Just as the woman longs for previous time when she was with her lover on the bank of the river in the moonlight. So that is the mood of the Rath Yatra, and Krishna, Lord Chaitanya takes the mood of the gopis who want to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan, and they're not satisfied with seeing him in Kurukshetra. So in the Rath Yatra, Lord Chaitanya, that was his mood of bringing Krishna back to Vrindavan.
Krishna came to Vrindavan that time. Gopis brought Krishna to back to Vrindavan.
Not literally then. No, Krishna went back to Dwarka at that time. No, this is Lord Chaitanya's mood of going back to Vrindavan, not that he literally did that. Now, of course, there are other stories like that where Krishna went back with, I think, Balaram and Subhadra to Vrindavan at one time. That, of course, is not in the regular scriptures. It's probably some Aurya scripture or something like that.
I don't even one step off
Yeah, Yeah. So that is the opinion of some persons. Vishnu Chakravarti says, I don't agree with that. That Krishna does leave for certain purposes. In other words, he separates himself for a short period of time and then he returns. Of course, the other point is, in the spiritual world, Krishna never leaves. So he's always with the inhabitants of Vrindavan in the spiritual world, so he never leaves there. The simultaneous spiritual world exists, plus the Leelas on earth exist, so in that sense, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan, because he's always in the spiritual world in Vrindavan. But as far as the earthly pastimes, he does separate himself for a short period of time to increase their sense of Ripalamba Rasa, and then he comes back here. That's his idea. Though others say Krishna never leaves Vrindavan now also. Well, yes, Krishna, when he goes to Mathura, then he assumes a different role. So he's not exactly, he's still the same Krishna, and he looks the same, and he's a Kishore age. But his mood is different, of course, because he accepts Vasudeva and Devakya as his father and mother there. And Vasudeva and Devaki accept him as their son at the same time they see him as God, because they know he had four hands when he came out of the womb. So their worship is a little different there. It's Krishna, but the mood is a little different, slightly different, because of the understanding he is God. So that's the Vasudeva Krishna there.
So that understanding one part from
Well, as I said, we can take it in two ways. One, in the spiritual world, he's always there. The other, of course, in upper Kali, he did return, as I said, in order to fulfill his promise to the Rajavasis. So he is there in one sense.
So but now how do we understand the devotees, the Lord can expand and
Of course, by the inconceivable potency of Krishna, he can expand himself and all of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, plus they're still in the spiritual world as well. So that's the power of Krishna. Plus he has Aparikat Lila at the same time on earth, but he goes to Mathura and Dwarka, and then the Vrajavasis have two forms as well. Aparikat and Prakat. So by the power of Krishna, he can do anything. So he can expand all those inhabitants into many, many forms as well.
And another thing we learned is the gopis, when they get completely absorbed in Krishna, that they think they are Krishna. How do we think?
That is only a symptom of the ecstasy. One of the symptoms of ecstasy on a very high level is identity with Krishna. Most of that symptom is there. That's all it is. It doesn't mean they are Krishna, but they imitate him.
Two sets of devotees is mentioned. And apparently it seems like Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda comes in the apparently suffering death of category. But how do we understand? There's the two types of devotees you are mentioning, Krishna many times, so one is Buddha and the other is Buddha.
Yeah.
So from Uttava, Uttava was received at that time, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda were there and there.
Yeah, in the prakat form, they're in separation from Krishna, and Buddha consoles them and the gopis in one form. And in the other form, he's actually back with them, but we don't see that. And then everyone's joyful.
So the same personality will be there in the other.
Yeah, doubles. And they're by the Yoga Maya, they don't know what the other half is doing, so to speak.
In the Krishna book, it says that the cowherd boys and gopis, they understand that Krishna is sensed, like they address him, you are the Supreme Personality of God, the fact that they understand that he's God.
Sometimes we'll see the gopis or the cowherd boys in Nanya Soto will address Krishna as Supreme Lord. But yeah, at the same time, we understand that the people in Vrindavan have no obstruction of seeing Krishna as God. And that is their particular quality, which distinguishes them from the inhabitants of Mathura and Dwarka. And Mathura and Dwarka, they're very conscious of that. So, yes, there is periods of times that even the gopis, they will say, oh, you are Paramatma or whatever, to Krishna. And here also, it is explained that there is, you know, your Supreme Lord, so you're in control of all these meeting separations of everyone. So, in higher stages of love with Krishna, in there is temporary manifestation for certain purposes of understanding Krishna as God, but then immediately it gets covered over again and forget it completely. So we'll see, for instance, Krishna actually tests the devotees sometimes, and for instance, when Krishna saved his father from Varuna, and the servants of Varuna grabbed Nanda Maharaj into the water and took him away, and then Krishna dove in the water and got his father and brought him back. So then Nanda Maharaj told the cowherd men, you know what I saw? I saw that Krishna was down there and all the devatas were there and they were bowing down to Krishna as Supreme Lord. Krishna must be God. So then all the cowherd men, oh, Krishna must be God. And they began talking like this for some time. And then as they talked and talked and talked, and I said, no, that can't be right. Yes, Krishna's our son. That's not proper. Krishna's our son. You know, he's our son. Mother Soda feeds the milk and everything. God can, I cannot be God. So there are periods where Krishna will reveal himself, and he reveals himself as a universal form to Mother Yasoda. And then after Krishna, Mother Yasoda looks at Krishna and says, I must be seeing things. Like this. So the prema of the inhabitants of Vrindavan will overcome whatever they see in terms of Krishna being God, and whatever statements they make about Krishna being God, they immediately they'll forget it because of their intense love. It's also a test of Krishna also, that he does that sometimes, to show that actually that whatever they see is completely covered up by their prema. It's described in where Krishna separates himself from the gopis before the Ras Lila. Then they begin enacting Krishna's pastimes, the one place Buddha, the one place Krishna, etc. So that is a very high symptom where one identifies oneself with the Supreme Lord out of separation from the Lord. But that's a very temporary phenomenon, and they never, and when that's finished, then they don't believe they are Krishna, but they have these symptoms like this and acting like Krishna because of such attraction for him. That's explained as some sort of trick again. Sukadeva Goswami is a trick. He said, it's a trick like this. Because Parikshit said, oh, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Mother Yasoda, they get to, intimately deal with Krishna in such a way that nobody else can do. They must be very special. And then Sukadeva tells this story how Drona and Dara did austerities in past lifetimes to get Krishna as their son. And then they became Nanda and Yasoda. So that would mean they're sadhana siddhas. They're ordinary jivas who did some sadhana and then came to that position. So then they're not so special after all. So that was very disappointing to Parikshit Maharaj when he heard that. And then Sukadeva Goswami told the Dhammadhara Lila after that, and by that showed that actually Mother Yasoda is not a sadhana siddha devotee at all. So the meaning of that is that, yes, sometimes portions of the eternal associates can play roles in the material world like Drona and Dara. And they can play the role of sadhakas. And when finally the Krishna appears and Nanda and Yasoda appear, then Drona and Dara merge into Nanda and Yasoda again. And that's how they attain their form as Nanda and Yasoda by merging back into them. But originally the Amsas are portions of them to begin with, expansions of them to begin with. By the Lord's will, you can expand any.
This is how the Guru was supposed to
work.
So I guess Swami.